After the first four plagues helped convince Pharaoh that it was time to start making some counteroffers. In these first two parts of the series, we respectively covered the first two compromises. You remember the command was from Exodus 3:18. Moses was told by God, and Moses repeated to Pharaoh, that we need to go out into the wilderness and make a 3 days and make a sacrifice to our Lord, our God. Travel 3 days to the wilderness, make a sacrifice. The us was the people of Israel. And Pharaoh said, no, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to let you do it. So God says, okay, I'm going to give you four plagues. Okay, now think about it again. Well, I'll tell you what, first compromise, go ahead and I'll let you make a sacrifice, only I don't want you to leave the land. Okay, just do it right here. We'll kind of oversee it. That was the compromise of uncommitted worship. And then you had, right after that, Moses said, no, it's not going to work. We got to do what God told us to do. Then Pharaoh gave another counteroffer. Okay, I'll let you go into the wilderness, but you're not going to go very far. Okay? I want you within a short distance to where we can come and beat you up if we have to. That's called the compromise of an uncommitted heart. Just go a little bit of the way. Don't go all the way. And those are the two that we covered thus far. And these are two areas that the devil wants us to make a compromise in our lives. He wants us to have an uncommitted worship to him. He wants us to have an uncommitted heart to him. If we could do that against God, just be uncommitted in those two ways, the devil will have succeeded. But the third one we're going to cover this morning, I really hope this hits home to everybody. You see, Pharaoh was up to his antics again. And God gave him three more plagues to think about. The plague of livestock, result, Pharaoh hardened his heart. Plague of boils, hardening of Pharaoh's heart. Plague of hail, confession of sin, removal of plague, and then a hardening of his heart. And then we come to the, now remember, all these assaults are assaults on their gods. God is picking their gods off one after one after one after one. Nile God, you have Hapi, Shu, the sky god. You have all these different gods that are being clubbed down. So the Egyptians, they're kind of waning a bit in their god system. Well, that's what Tim read in introducing compromise number three, to serve God with uncommitted children. In Exodus 10, 7 through 11, the passage that Tim read, see, Pharaoh's servants came to him and said, now listen, how long are these people going to be a snare to us? We're tired of getting beat up. I mean, these plagues are really getting on our nerves. Would you just like compromise here? And so Pharaoh, in essence, said to Moses, okay, now who all you want to bring with you on this sacrifice that God commanded you to go sacrifice to? He said, well, I want to bring everyone, the young and the old, sons and daughters, everybody. And in essence, Pharaoh says, you know, if I let you and your little ones go, that ain't going to happen. You leave your little ones behind, take your men, go out and make your sacrifice. We'll do that. Pharaoh was willing to propose a compromise about leaving the children behind in Egypt. Now, why would you do that, Pharaoh? Many speculate it's because the Jews would surely come back for their children, and that makes a lot of sense. You know, he didn't want to lose this pool of cheap labor. But I think it's more than that. Because the Egyptians were skilled and proven in the area that if we can control that next generation, like they fed baby boys a generation before to the alligators in the Nile, if we can have a hand in the future generations of who we're trying to keep under control, well, if we could rock the cradle, if we could have a hand in that, then we could rule the world a little bit longer. And I think that that was even a greater motive here. If we could Control you with your children. Make them to where they're not going to be out participating in this religious revitalization, this revolution. If we can control that, then we have you. It's called the compromise of serving God with uncommitted children, because it was the little ones that were being proposed to be left behind. Simply not an option for the followers of God in that day. And lay breaking news for us today, it's not an option. Brothers and sisters, God appreciates all that you're doing for the kingdom. He does. He desires for you to serve Him with a complete commitment of worship and a committed heart. We talked about that in part one and part two. He loves you that you came up out of the waters of baptism on that day saying, I'm going to serve you with all my heart, my soul, and my mind. Lord, take me. Here I am. Send me. But He cannot tolerate us leaving our little ones behind in Egypt in our pursuit in a relationship with God. He won't tolerate it. Follow the foundation of Jesus. It says of young Jesus in Luke chapter 2, verse 52, you can turn to that if you want, underline this, the last verse in Luke chapter 2. Here's what it says. Very, very important. And Jesus kept increasing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. This statement was made while Jesus was 12 years old in the temple. He didn't even have a bar mitzvah yet. Simply summarized, Jesus grew mentally, He grew physically, spiritually, and socially. What was the foundation for this? It was primarily laid by the earthly parents that God chose for Jesus. You see, we don't know a lot about Jesus' early beginnings from the Holy Scriptures, but we know enough to make this assumption that the historical record that we do know of, that His parents were deeply involved in the culture of God. During that period in question for Joseph, when he found that Mary, his wife-to-be, was impregnated, he could have had her executed. But he decided, I'd put her away privately. But then God came to him in a vision and explained to him what was going on. In 1 verse 24 of Matthew, and Joseph awoke from his sleep and did as the angel of the Lord had commanded and took Mary to be his wife. That's how obedient he was. They followed religious protocol when they brought Jesus to the temple for circumcision and dedication in Luke chapter 2, verse 21. In Luke 2:39, it states, and they performed everything according to the law of the Lord, and they returned to Galilee to their own city of Nazareth. It was there that they would continue raising him in a faithful Jewish home. We know in Luke 2:41, it says, now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. They were serious about the relationship with God, and it showed in the Scriptures and in the life of Jesus. It is assumed that Joseph and Mary nourished the child, because I'm sure Jesus ate, and they also educated him, because he was educated. Jesus grew in these areas, and you needed parental influence to do that. God saw fit to have him in a home that would cause him to grow in every way. We as Christian parents have an obligation to our children as well. We as parents are to educate our children in the ways of the Lord. Ephesians 6:4, we're told for the fathers not to provoke the children to anger, but to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That's an imperative commandment. As the hymnal based in Psalm 119 verse 9 says, how shall the young secure their hearts? guard their lives from sin. Thy word, the choicest rule imparts to keep the conscience clean. We as parents are to provide for the physical needs of our children. 1 Timothy 5 verse 8 tells us if we don't take care of our own, especially those of our own house, we're worse than an infidel and have denied the faith. We're told in Luke chapter 11, verses 11 and 2, Jesus said, now suppose if a father is asked by his son for a fish, will he give him a snake instead of a fish? Of course not. If he asks for an egg, will he give him a scorpion? No, of course not. He's going to give him what he needs. We as parents are to generate an environment of spirituality for our children. In Mark chapter 9, verse 42, Jesus said, whoever causes one of these little ones who believe to stumble, it would be better for him if a heavy millstone were tied around his neck and he were cast into the sea. That's pretty devastating. Colossians 3:21, the fathers are not to exasperate their children so that they lose heart. They need to be providing a spiritual environment. In Psalm 78, verse 4, we will not conceal them from their children, but to tell the generation to come the praises of the Lord and the strength and his wondrous works that he has done. That doesn't happen by accident. 1 Thessalonians 2:11, just as you were exhorting and encouraging and employing each one of you as a father would to his own children, it is accepted fact we are to provide a spiritual environment for our children. But also we as parents are to expose our children to the society of the church. Fact. Matthew 19, verse 13 to 14, some of the children were brought to Jesus and he was asked to lay their hands on them and pray. Disciples rebuked him. They didn't want the children to be included. What did Jesus say? Let the children alone and do not hinder them from coming to me, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. We should want to surround with our children with Christian peers, because bad company corrupts good morals. 1 Corinthians 15:33. And if you've been blessed to have children or grandchildren in your life, you need to count them as one of the highest blessings that God could afford you. As David recorded in Psalm 127, verse 4 and 5, like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. Do you feel blessed? You need to. With great blessing comes great responsibility, and nothing can be further true than the blessing that children bring to our lives. Palm Beach Lakes Church of Christ Youth Study. When Dave and I were out at Bear Valley a few weeks ago, we spent many hours around the table with the staff at Bear Valley. The second day, it was just on youth. They provided us a youth study that was done from a sisterhood church down in Florida. A few years back, Palm Beach Lakes Church of Christ, they tracked nearly three decades of their youth to graduation. There were 151 students that graduated from high school through that youth program. And the following statistics are found. No less than 5 years from their graduation, 47% were still faithful. 47%. And 53% were no longer faithful. Look at some of these stats. If the home lacked a faithful father upon graduation, there wasn't a faithful father figure in their life, that rate of unfaithfulness rose to 62%. If there was not a faithful mother in the home upon graduation, it rose to 72% of unfaithfulness. If the student was not actively involved with the youth program of the church, unfaithfulness rose to 80%. If the student was not in a regular Bible study and worship, infidelity rate rose to 90%. If the student attended only Sunday morning worship, 90% failure rate. If the student went on to a Christian college, 78% remained faithful. If the student did not attend a Christian college, 68% were unfaithful. If a student married a Christian, they were found to have stayed faithful 78% of the time. And if they didn't, they married a non-Christian, 87% of the time, they were not going to be faithful. Of those that remained faithful, okay, let me summarize a few of these. If you take those who remained faithful, here's what they had. 70% had a faithful father, 90% a faithful mother, 85% were regularly involved in the youth group, 97% were regularly at Bible study and worship, both of them. 55% attended a Christian college, and 87% married a Christian. But of those who weren't faithful, 43% did not have a faithful father, 23% did not have a faithful mother, 75% were not regularly involved in the youth program, 63% they didn't go to Bible study and worship, 86% did not go on to a Christian college, 76% did not marry a Christian. Let me give you some conclusions of this data. Number one, there are never any 100% scenarios. You have to understand that. It doesn't come out in the numbers. It doesn't come out in life. Just because your child is completely committed to the youth program today does not mean that they are guaranteed to remain faithful. But we knew that. Statistics point out a pattern, not a guarantee. The odds of many of us becoming a first-generation Christian is quite unlikely. Think about it. There are many converts here. I'm going to give the basic mosaic of our congregation. It's like everywhere else. There are people who came out of the gutters of life, the bar scene, from prison, from drugs and alcohol, from fornication, from adultery, from being liars, cheaters, and thieves, you name it. Okay? The odds are converting a group of those type of people are slim. But you know what? You're proof that that happens. You're 100% proof that that happens. But the group I'm talking about is not a first generation group. It is a second and longer generation, third and fourth generation. We're talking about people who God has put in under your household, under your influence, that you have them for so many years. That's who we're talking about. And those statistics are haunting. The effects, number two, are cumulative. The factors that determine where a person might choose to go to college and who they choose to marry are often in place long before those decisions are even made. The evidence shows that if a child grows up in a home where emphasis is placed on Christian education and a Christian marriage, there is internal pressure to conform to that community. Where there's a lack of conviction, it will show up in the major decisions of life. You can be a Christian and not be at a Christian university. You can be a Christian and end up not marrying someone who's a not Christian, so to speak. The odds are you'll probably marry a Christian if your heart is in that. Here's number three. Here's what we know for sure, guaranteed. The number one, okay, that's the best. That's the best. Zero doesn't beat one. The number one factor that determines generational faithfulness is parental involvement. There it is, parental involvement. We are told in Proverbs 22, verse 6, to train up a child in the way he should go. When he is old, he will not depart from it. This is so true, and the statistics bear it out. When parents are heavily committed to Christ and the church family, they will have a significantly greater rate of making sure that faith transcends down to the next generation. 2 years ago, we had a study here at Camp Hill Church of Christ. And we tracked 35 years of graduates from our youth program, 108 of them. So this should hit home. From 1973 to 2008, 100 graduates left this congregation. Here's what they found. Some 84% of those who were active in the youth group as teens are attending church today. But only 40% of those who were not active in the youth group are faithful now. The activity level of the youth group seems to be strongly influenced by whether both parents were actively involved. 72% versus 20%. That's not even close. About 79% of those active in the youth group attended Christian camps, but only 20% of the non-active teens did so. About 58% of those active in the youth group attended a Christian college, but none of the non-active teens did. The concluding statement from that was, do you want your child to marry a Christian? The odds go up if this happens. Send them to Christian camps, Christian colleges, and get them active in a youth group. 2/3 of those active teens married Christians, but only 20% of those not actively involved did. The evidence is quite clear. What other congregations around the world have also concluded, it's parental involvement, number one factor. Aren't you glad that you know, if you're a parent, that you can lead your family instead of just having kids lead it? Imagine if your kids had to be put in charge of leading your family. It'd be tough, wouldn't it? Think about that. Yeah, Abby, did you pay that credit card bill? It'd be El Mortgage. It would be bad. But once again, God chose my birth date just like He chose Abby's and just like He chose your date of birth. He knew when you were born. God saw fit for me to be the parent in my family and for Jana. Number one factor, parental involvement. If we are going to be involved in our children's lives, you have to look at it this way. I refuse to leave my kids in Egypt. That is not going to work, Pharaoh. It's not going to work, devil. I cannot press on toward the mark of the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus and wave goodbye to my kids. I can't have my kids looking at Sphinx and pyramids while I go into the promised land. It can't happen. God won't accept it, and He will judge me on whether or not I take Him with me when I go. And He'll judge you too. So I offer you this 30-day challenge, just like after every lesson we've had in this series. First of all, it all boils down to the third. This is a challenge here. I'm going to give you one point. Get involved today. Let me see. Today, yeah, that's like now. Not next month, today. And here's how you can do it. If you've been leaving your children behind in Egypt concerning youth activities, you go to your sons and your daughters today. And immediately following this sermon, not Tuesday of the third week in the next year, today. If you have been guilty of leaving children back in Egypt, and all of us have at one time or another, go to our kids and confess it and ask for forgiveness of this, because they know you left them in Egypt. They can recognize a pyramid when they see it. They need to hear that heart break. They need to hear that confession, see those tears, and rejoice in your decision. And then for the next 30 days, be involved in every single youth event that is offered that you can legitimately attend. Talk to the youth activities deacon, David Miller, or go to one of the elders. Be a volunteer at these events. Be super involved. Put a cape on. Put an S on there. I'm super involved. You won't even feel like it, most of you. I know I wouldn't. But we have to put the cape on. Use this as the foundation for the rest of the time you have with your children, because they won't be around for long. If you've blown it with your own children and they're out of your reach now, you may have a great sense of missed opportunity, and you can't go back in time. It's not like Marty McFly and build a machine, go back and change something. We can't do that. Whatever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. But what you can do is plant new seed today. Use that information and go and be involved in the youth group today. You might have blown it with your own kids, but God will still bless you if you can play a part in changing the lives of others in the future. And if you focus on that, you'll be surprised how God will revisit that back on your own family. For the next 30 days, go to those in the congregation who do not have a faithful dad, and commit to develop your own Big Brother program. There are kids in our own congregation who may not have a dad, who's actively involved, might not even know who their dad is. You can be their dad. There's no reason you can't have 4 or 5 good men to get together and say, listen, we're going to be that figure. We're going to put that factor in this kid's life. And maybe they need a faithful mom. You can do the same thing with that. Just because you don't have youth doesn't mean you can't be involved in the youth program. That's the next generation. How can you walk away from Egypt knowing where you're going and leaving somebody else's kid behind? You would never let somebody's kid play out in the street. There's even greater danger. Because hell, the road to hell is wide and busy. You should not let other kids walk out there as well. Take 30 days, really devote yourself to setting up a commitment, and then follow up with it. Be involved. There are many, you know, if your children have already moved on and, you know, you don't have grandkids yet, or you're looking for something to do, help. You can go and help. But I'm 85 years old. Great, they need a grandmother figure. But I'm older than their grandma. They need a great-grandmother figure. It takes a church family as a village to raise a kid. There are many camps, opportunities that you could help sponsor a child in. At Bear Valley Church of Christ in Colorado, I want to tell you about something. I was really excited to hear something. They have a couple different camps. One is like a preacher's camp. For the price of a plane ticket, we can send any one of our young men from age 13 to 18, who they might want to be a better leader, maybe a future elder, maybe they're interested in preaching, maybe they're interested in being a church leader in some capacity. They pay for everything. They pick you up at the airport, take you to your lodging at Bear Valley Church of Christ, pay for your meals, your curriculum, whatever you're doing, and then take you back to the airport. And the only thing you're responsible for is to get them to that airport. We have kids that will be going to that. They have a similar program for some of the young ladies. Why aren't we taking advantage of those things? We will. There's Camp Manitani and PCC. Go up, volunteer. There are always kids who need funding. There are kids who have to make the decision sometimes because it's based on money. It should never be based on that. Never. God's blessed you in a way and your kids have moved on. Sponsor a kid right here in the congregation. Many of you have done that. I appreciate it. They do too. volunteer to be a driver at these events, volunteer to cook at these events, plan to assist in anywhere that there's a need. You can be involved in the classes for our youth. You might be a grandmother, a grandfather, brothers, sisters, cousins, former roommate. You have a place in the youth group. You need to be involved. Please make your child available as well. It's not just a matter. You know what I like about the Brannons? You can hold any one of their kids at any time. They've been trained well. Have you noticed that? No. Here, did you hold a Brannon kid this week? But make your kids available to be recipients of some good quality ministry work. There are moms who come to our congregation and have a hard time just even hearing the sermon. Be that one person who might say, listen, I know how to hold a child. I want to help you with this. If you want me to help, I'll help you with it. It could be as simple as that. But be involved. That's the point. Be involved. I want to close with this story. In the first year of my Christianity, I did not take serious the need to have my young son go to Bible classes, but only worship on Sunday morning. That's a picture of me, that skinny person with those 80s glasses. That's Adam. And you know, this went on for a few months. I was tired, you know. It was hard getting up that extra hour in the morning. It was hard. Wednesday night, my goodness, you know, I was working all day. That's hard. I thought going to Sunday morning worship, well, that meets the standard. Clock was punched. I'm reading the Bible all the time. And then, you know, I have to admit I was wrong. Our minister, Wayne Walling, the man who baptized me, he brought me into his office one Sunday after worship, and he asked me a question that hit me in the chest like a sledgehammer. He said, Doug, I know you're studying and growing in your relationship with God, but if you're not taking advantage of classes and fellowship for your young son, then when will he be exposed to the church family? What could I say? I hate it and I love it when I'm wrong. That pricked me in the heart because I didn't want to leave my kid in Egypt. Well, I pressed on in my spiritual walk. How can I go to the promised land without my son? Well, I committed that day to be involved in the youth program. In fact, Janet and I extended that policy to all of our children. And we needed to be reminded along the way by other people, hey, you're going to the promised land. Don't forget your kids. You don't learn everything in one lesson and remember it. But you know, we stuck with it. Let me give you four great reasons why Jan and I stuck with that. Their names are Adam, Natalie, Abby, and Andrew. That's why we stuck with it. Last night, I called Brother Wallen. I haven't talked with him for a while. He was happy to hear from me. He said, well, why are you calling? I said, I wanted to pay some dividends on a decision that you invested in me. He said, what do you mean? I said, I told him I was going to do a sermon today. I was going to bring him up. I said that one of my turning points in my children's lives were on that day you pulled me in the office. And you said, you have to make a decision. You point out the error of my way and you placed it in my heart. And I wanted to thank you for my children and hopefully my grandchildren to stay faithful. Thank you. I hope and pray that a couple decades from now, maybe one of you will give me a call and say, Doug, on this date, you hit me in the heart with a sledgehammer. And I want to thank you. That's what I really hope. I hope you make the best decision to pass that baton of faith on to your generations to come. Never fall for the compromise of uncommitted children. Do not leave your children in Egypt for one more day. You go back today and you get them. You think about that while we stand and sing.